banged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down?
It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show.
All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine, and maybe just a little bit more.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host this week, Dr. Eric Pifel. Dr. Eric, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
Man, it's good to see you. It's been a bit.
Yeah.
Everything's
good? Summer's good. Good to be back doing a little bit of radio.
Well, and high school football, can you believe that we're about to get into week six?
I was just looking at our schedule. I can't believe we're starting to think about playoffs.
Unbelievable. And some teams qualified last night.
Yeah.
So they got that win that qualifies them. You know, on the Thursday Night Lights game that I do for my 24, I haven't even had to bring a jacket yet.
Yeah.
And it's week six.
Great weather.
It's been great weather.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it really has. There has been some injuries. I want to start, if we can, and there's a number of them I want to start with, and mostly football injuries. But I want to start, I think, with the Bucs injury. Chris Middleton is going to be gone at least 6 months. And it says due to a hamstring injury. If they're doing surgery on that, he tore that hamstring, right?
Yes, and the details are a little bit out. But if he is having surgery on this, so unlike if you look at the Packers injury list this week, I think there's five or six guys with a hamstring injury. That's a muscular injury, so the middle of the thigh. The assumption is with Chris Middleton is that this is an avulsion where the hamstring actually pulls off of the bone. And when those occur, especially for a long, lean athlete, but also a leaping athlete like a basketball player, this is a significant amount of weakness if it's not fixed. So they'll have to manage that, and it has a very, very long recovery, as you're seeing.
Well, and they say 6 months. Would you be comfortable in putting that as 6 months? Do you know what, an injury like that, I would assume on a college kid, and it depending on what division 1, 2, or 3, if it's division 3 college kid, he doesn't have the resources, they don't have the resources that they're going to, you know, get him back in 6 months. Somebody like Chris Middleton, who's an elite athlete and is going to have all the resources at hand, 6 months is doable?
Yeah, you know, I think we've talked about this before. The access is what the professionals have in comparison to our high school or division 3 athletes. They have a trainer round the clock. They have nutritionists. They have a fit body going into the injury. So when they have a surgery that is fairly extensive and the recovery is fairly extensive, it's fairly predictable how soon they'll get back because they have such great access. Having said that, they also have very high expectations.
Right.
But I think 6 months is very reasonable looking at averages.
Can you talk about the actual surgery process for something like that? You said it's an extensive surgery.
So the assumption is that it is torn off the pelvis or the bone of the hips.
Okay.
If you kind of think about your sit bone that you sit down on a chair. So the hamstrings come off of that and go down the leg and then attach to the knee to allow our knee to bend and create explosiveness for leaping athletes. If you lose that portion of the tendon off the bone, what happens is the muscle shortens and you don't have that explosiveness or strength. So the surgery will be, if this is what it is, an incision on the backside to recreate that placement of the tendon at the bone.
Boy, that had to be really painful. I would think it's a really painful injury.
In the patients that I see, it's a significantly difficult injury just because of its location. Sitting is hard. Doing day-to-day activities are hard, let alone trying to play hoops.
Hey, let's move on if we can. The Badgers start at they kick it off at 11 o'clock today. And there are some questionable running back. Corey Clement is questionable. Deal, their other running back is questionable. But the one that everybody keeps talking about is their kicker is out with a bad back. And, you know, he was limping last week. And so I'm wondering if he was having back spasms or tweaked it, but he is not going to make the trip. He's not at Michigan State today, and they're going to try a kicker who hasn't kicked a field goal since his high school days. And in your opening for Big Ten, that's a big deal. But obviously a back is really important for a kicker.
Yeah, certainly a couple things going into that. Certainly a brand-new kicker going to East Lansing, not an easy environment to play. Two, back is important for all football players, but for a skill athlete like a kicker, where consistency and uniformity when you come to put the foot down and kick, having a bad back would be very difficult because you aren't able to stabilize your core to maintain the balance to have the appropriate trajectory.
And he, you know what? He looked really good. He looked like he dropped some weight. He was a big kicker last year. Yes. Looked like he had dropped some weight. Was really striking the ball well. So I'm hoping that he'll be back for that Michigan game next week.
Backs are finicky, but certainly some time off is typically what's needed, at least at first.
Well, as long as he's back for the Ohio State game, that's the key. I love that hat you're wearing,
by
the way.
Yeah, that'll probably, I think, 25-3, he'll get one field goal.
He'll get one field goal. Hey, before we get into more of local guys, I have a question for you. Because a lot of what we're talking about is some of the common injuries with football. One that jumped off the page to me, and I had him last year in a fantasy league, Philadelphia Eagles tight end Zach Ertz won't play this week. He might be back next week after they have a week four bye. But he has a displaced rib, and that's not one that you hear a lot about when you're doing some of these football injuries. How does that happen, and what do they just have to let it heal on its own?
Well, most rib injuries are fractures. Sometimes you'll break the bone. Sometimes it'll be displacement of the cartilage. But the ribs, if you think of them as kind of a lattice, if you think of a skeleton's rib cage, those ribs are sitting in a soft tissue bed, kind of like a hot dog in a bun. Sometimes those ribs will displace from that little groove and be painful. And anytime you have a rib injury, displacement, cartilage injury, fracture, day-to-day life is tough, breathing is tough, let alone trying to run a route or take a tackle. So it is not uncommon to have some time off with that because life is tough, let alone football.
Yeah, a number of Thanksgivings ago, my brother from Florida was in town, and we're at my mom's house, and he was he's 61. He's still catching in hardball. He ran the Boston Marathon type thing. Always had quicker hands than I do. He's my older brother, and he used to always want to slap box. So I was walking by, and he put his hands up, and I said, no, don't do that. I'm not getting too old for this stuff. And he took a swing, and he missed, and I just jabbed him on the side a little bit, but I hit him perfect. And down he went, and he was not breathing great. And he had to fly back to Florida. He had cracked his rib. And he's been through a lot of injuries with the stuff he does. He said, man, that was the worst couple weeks ever. Couldn't sleep, couldn't laugh, couldn't cough. And we haven't slapboxed since.
Has he been back to Wisconsin since?
He has, but it's all hugs and, you know, that kind of
gentle
stuff.
Gentle hugs.
And it was, you know what? It wasn't that I hit him that hard, but I must have hit him just right.
Yeah, they're a very painful injury just because you can't do anything without your chest wall.
Yeah, he said the flight home was just ridiculously hard. He was not happy with me. Hey, a couple questions with the Packers. Sam Shields is the one that I think is probably the most concerning because he was out last year with concussion. He has not yet passed through the concussion protocol again, and he'll be out on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, concussion is very important. We've talked about this quite a bit. You heard our spot about our concussion program at Correct. Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital. But, you know, the reason we have these programs is to make sure that our athletes are ready to go back. The NFL has a very extensive policy because their athletes are starting to have long-term issues, as we've seen in the lay media and even movies with Will Smith. So in this type of situation, they're taking their time to make sure he gets back appropriately. And if he is not passing the protocol, it means he's still having symptoms. And if he's having symptoms with day-to-day life or easy practice, he definitely isn't ready to go full bore in an NFL game.
Yeah, and the fact that this happened to him last year, is that a bigger concern for you?
Well, that's the problem. Just like if you stretch out a rubber band over and over again, it gets weaker and weaker. The brain, when it has a concussion, it has a higher propensity for concussion in the future with less and less activity. So they have to be cautious getting someone back, especially with a repetitive injury, because that's where the brain is at highest risk.
Hey, some of these players on the list, you know, the NFL has changed how they do this. It's a DNP, which is did not practice. LP, which is limited participation in practice, FP, which is full participation, so that questionable and the things they've done in the past for guys like me that play fantasy football, you know, you had an idea.
Right. The NFL does understand it is a business. It understands that fantasy football is a part of it, understands that betting is part of it. So when it comes to their players, they are giving suggestions of who may or may not play.
Right.
By limiting it, it helps the fans be involved. But the truth is, the coaches, much like Bill Belichick, who has everyone on the list,
right,
understand it's also something as to strategize against the other team. So they're helpful, but when you're making your fantasy picks, you may want to only partially consider them.
You bet. There's a couple guys on the list. Morgan Burnett, with a groin injury, did not participate most of the week. Micah Hyde, who was out with an ankle, he was in full participation, so he's going to be a go. Dayton Jones, with a bad knee, has not participated at all. And, you know, the one that is on here every week, who is Clay Matthews, and they'll say, hey, DNP did not participate, and he normally doesn't practice a lot anyway.
Right, and, you know, that's why I'm saying when you see these type of updates from the NFL, that oftentimes these players are on rep counts, much like pitch counts in baseball. And if they have lingering injuries, especially of long muscles like hamstrings with Clay Matthews or groins, oftentimes they'll be on limited play to see if they're able to do some participation in pregame. If they do well, then they'll allow them to proceed rather than get re-injured during the week.
You know, on Thursday night, the New England Patriots, they won 27-0 over Houston. They're down to their third quarterback, who had a right thumb ligament injury and continued to play. Now, it looks like he's going to be out for a while. Is that surgery for him, or do they just let it heal?
Based on what they described, it sounded like it was what we call a gamekeeper's thumb, or an injury to the ligament that keeps the thumb from going side to side. If they are going to immobilize it, it probably means it wasn't a significant injury. They're going to probably try to immobilize it, see how he does. Fortunately, their fourth-string quarterback played quarterback in college. Julian Edelman played at
right.
Kent State.
Right.
So they have a fourth-string quarterback, but four quarterbacks in 4 weeks, that seems insane. But if they go 4-0 with that, you know Belichick's the best of all time.
Well, and I have I picked up Tom Brady. You know what? I took him like middle of the draft, and I thought if I could just get to 2-2 by the time he gets back, I'll be okay. Well, he's obviously ready to go.
They certainly seem like they can win with anyone, let alone with him.
But that's the deal. How good is Brady if they can win with Julian Edelman? Is there, you know, he may end up being their quarterback. A couple other ones that kind of jumped off, and maybe it's because I do this fantasy thing, but Arian Foster will not play against Cleveland. He's got a groin injury. You know, he's up and down. And Devontae Parker, again from the Dolphins, a hamstring injury, very questionable. You know, those hamstring injuries, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, but boy, those are injuries that if you're not careful, you could just repeat this over and over. It could be a long year.
Hamstrings are a long muscle group, and for guys that need explosiveness off the line or skill players, to be able to continue to play through that is very difficult, because the longer the pain is there, the more probable that this is going to smolder throughout the season. So when you have your skill athletes having hamstring injuries with these long muscle groups, the probability of them getting back and being significantly effective is small. And on Arian Foster, I mean, this is a guy that has been injured over and over and over again. And those are the type of guys I stay away from in fantasy football, is because if they are injury prone, it's going to continue. And is that because they have bad muscles and bad bones, or do they not do well dealing with injury? It's probably a bit of both.
I've got like four guys on my team that are suspended for 3 or 4 weeks. The running back from Pittsburgh, he's coming back soon. I got, yeah, maybe I just took all guys that are the bad boys.
Maybe
or
you were just a bad boy at heart.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Hey, he is Dr. Eric Pfeifel. You can get more information on him, mymosh.com. We're going to talk about common football injuries, and there's a number of them that I think there's people that aren't quite sure, but they hear things like the Achilles tendon ruptures, and, you know, they go, oh, yeah, it's Achilles tendon. But I don't think they really know what that means. No. So I want to talk about some of those, and especially this time of year, high school football, college football going on, NFL. We're going to talk a little bit and look at common football injuries with Dr. Eric Pifel. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
I just want to stay in the sun where I find. I know it's hard sometimes. Pieces of peace in the sun.
21 Pilots. Name of the song is Ride. They are from Columbus, Ohio.
Just like all great things.
Just like all great things. Hey, before we get into the common injuries, we haven't had you in for a while, Dr. Pifel. Can we go through your background, where you grew up, and how you got to where you are today? What the turning point when you decided this is what I want to do for my living?
Well, I grew up in near Akron.
Okay.
I went to Ohio State and did my medical training until residency in Ohio, and then I matched here in the Medical College of Wisconsin and have stayed here since. I went to college to be an engineer and found out that I'm good at math, but I hate math. So I decided to go to medicine, was going to be a primary care doctor, was ready to do a family practice residency, and then the sports medicine guys at my medical school kind of took me under their wing, and I loved it and haven't turned back, and love watching sports, playing sports, coaching sports, and now taking care of athletes. So it's all encompassing in my life.
Married, kids?
Married, my wife Tiffany, two little boys who I love coaching soccer and baseball. And
how old are they?
They're 11 and 9. Hopefully they're listening because that last song was for Logan.
There you go. Is that the 9-year-old?
The 11-year-old.
The 11? And what's the 9-year-old's name?
Camden, like Camden Yard.
Yep. That's awesome. I envy you so. I do, because you get a chance to do something that I thoroughly enjoyed, and that was coaching my son. My daughter played basketball till 8th grade, and then when her season ended, she came out of the locker room and said, "Phew, glad I never have to do that again." And my son played all the way through. He played in college, and I got the chance to coach him in AAU, coach him in high school, and then became a fan and watched him in college. And when it ends abruptly and quickly, and I miss it so.
Yeah, the seeing kids develop the skill sets of sports, but also teamwork, dedication, those are the rewarding parts of coaching and parenting of kids who grow up in sports.
You know, I read a book called Coaching Our Sons, and I read it twice while I was coaching my son in high school, and it's an older book now, but it is the good, the bad, and the ugly of Wisconsin coaches who have coached their sons, and some are great stories. Others, it broke up families. And I read that book a couple of times, and it was really beneficial to me.
Yeah, so. I think it's like anything in life. You can really ruin great things by overdoing them, and you can ruin them by not putting enough time in. And if you find that middle ground where you can commit, but also not hover over your kids and making sure everything's perfect, things go well.
You know, the biggest part of reading that book for me was I found that once we got to the kitchen table, I was his father. So after games, he would ride home with his mom sometimes because he wanted to get to the kitchen table before I did, because then I was his father. And we talked about, you know, homework and life and girls and that kind of stuff, things other than basketball.
It's good to have that delineation. The dinner table is a great way to change things up.
No doubt. Hey, let's, if we can, we're going to take the rest of the show, and we're going to look at common football injuries. And, you know, you hear a lot about sprains and strains and ACLs and MCLs and tendons. And so I just want to kind of go through some of these. When somebody asks you, Dr. Pifel, what's the most common football injury, what would you say?
You know, if you just kind of break it down in the anatomy, it's the knee. The knee is the most common, most likely because football is a game of grappling along the line. It is a speed game, but it's also a collision game in which the target typically is the lower extremities, especially as the rule sets diminish the ability to hit higher. The lower extremities are going to be where they're injured, and you're seeing that in the NFL now that blows to the head and upper torso are being outlawed. We're having a lot more knee injuries, and that's because the defensive back and linebackers have to hit there. So the knee is definitely the most common injury. After that, ankles, Achilles, those type of things.
Hey, could you, and we're going to get more into those. I was asked a question when somebody knew that you were coming in, and they said, could you have him explain what a stinger is? Sure. Because, and I'm almost certain that at the game I was at on Thursday, there was one, and I'll explain after I hear your definition.
So, you know, most of us who watch enough football have seen a player get up. They kind of look odd because they're kind of standing there almost zombie-like, and then they have their arm kind of hanging down like it's about to fall off, and they run off because they're not moving it. So if you see that player with one arm hanging down to the side with a shoulder a little bit lower, that typically is a stinger. Not always. Sometimes it's a dislocated shoulder or an arm injury. But if, especially in a defensive player in which they are tackling leading their shoulder, what happens is there's a group of nerves in the shoulder called the brachial plexus. And those groups of nerves come out of the neck and go into the arm. And so when you do a blow with the shoulder, what happens is it basically compresses it down like a nutcracker, and those nerves kind of fall asleep. And what happens is the nerve get sleepy, or they'll get kind of a stinging sensation down their arm, and they'll run off. And usually, if this is not recurrent, this will go away with time, and the trainers and physicians on the sidelines will make sure that their sensation is back, their strength is back, and that they're not having any other symptoms, making sure they're not having a neck injury or anything associated with it. But typically it's a stretch injury because of the type of tackle they had to the nerve bundle in the shoulder.
There's a young man, I was on the sidelines for Kenosha Bradford, and he made a tackle, and he got up, and he was running off, and his arm was dangling, and he was screaming a little bit, and he went to the end of the bench, and he got to his knees, basically, and he had his head on the bench, and his arm was just dangling, and the trainer, the doctor came over, and they talked a little bit to him, and he was shaking his head, and you could see tears just coming down his face. And literally within a minute and a half, he was up and he was doing some rotations with his arm, and he kind of wiped the tear away a little bit, and you could see him kind of smiling. And I don't walk over there to ask these questions, but I thought, man, that's a stinger right there. And he was back by the time the defense was back on the field, he was back there. And a minute and a half before that, you thought, you know, he was done.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing turn of events when you have an injury like this. And if you've never had one, they're super scary because your arm suddenly is not working for you. And you go, oh my gosh, what happened? The nice part is typically most guys have seen other people have this. And typically the medical staff is well-versed in these. So keeping a kid calm, let them kind of shake it out and kind of feel that nerve come back to life is typically fairly gratifying. There's some things as physicians and trainers we need to do to make sure that it's not something else. But yeah, this is a pretty quick injury. Now, when they become recurrent, where they're every week, and then that becomes an issue.
Hey, the other one I wanted to talk to you about, and to be honest with you, I hear it a lot, and I just shake my head and go, oh, yeah, I understand. I don't really understand what a hip pointer is, and it seems like that is talked about, or you hear it a lot, and people always shake their head. Oh yeah, he had a hip pointer. I don't really understand what that means.
Well, it's a grouping of injuries, and a hip pointer, in its most general terms, is the bony prominences along the pelvis or the hip bones have attachments of muscles. There's not a lot of coverage over that, especially in our thinner athletes. Because they're so lean for speed. So when you don't have a lot of coverage over top of bone, if you get hit, especially with a hard portion of the gear, a helmet, a shoe, what happens is you get a significant amount of bruising into that bone. Now, that bone is not in isolation. It has tendons and muscles that are coming off of that, including the abdominal muscles that help us breathe and twist with our core, our leg muscles, including our hamstrings, and our muscles that allow our legs to move in all planes. So when you get a bruising of that and the soft tissue gets irritated, it is very difficult to stand and run in a straight line, let alone cut and take other hits.
Is that an injury, depending, I guess, on the severity, that you're going to be out for a week, 2 weeks, more than that?
It depends on the severity. Yeah. It depends on the location. And it also depends on the player's position. You know, certainly a lineman is probably going to be able to tolerate that. It's going to hurt, But they have mostly some padding to go over top of that, both in their own padding and regular padding.
Yes, we do.
It is a significantly variable. It's based on the severity, but also the need of the player.
Is there a position that would get more hip pointers than others?
You know, I think your leaner athletes, your receivers that are taking blows, certainly running backs, because of the amount of hits they take coming through the line. So your offensive skill players are typically going to have them more, but they can occur in anyone just because of the contact.
You know, you had talked about in our first segment, Arian Foster's a player that gets injured a lot. And there's a lot of wear and tear on his body because being a running back he carried the ball a lot early in his days, and he carried it a ton. And there gets to a point, I think, especially in the NFL, that you hit the point of this is it, and you start going down the other way in your career. And especially as a running back, it's hard to stop that aging process.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. A couple of years ago, someone had brought up the 30-year limit on running backs, and I thought that was hoo-ha. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s where we had Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton and growing up with Jim Brown and those guys, certainly these guys lasted forever. And now we're seeing running backs last 2-3 years and then kind of dwindle out their years into their 30s. It's very interesting in this day and age. I think it's due to the speed and the size of the athletes.
I asked Gary Ellerson, who's on the Big Show, what it was like the day after. You know, being an NFL running back, you play. What's it like on Monday, Tuesday? And he said, "Do you really want to know?" I said, "I do." He said, "Put on a football uniform and go in the alley and 25 times in a row run as hard as you can right into the garage door. And let me know how you feel the next day." And he said, "Monday's not the worst. Tuesday's the worst."
Yeah.
And he said, "Man, Tuesday, I used to think I'm never playing this thing again. And by Wednesday, you start feeling a little bit better. And by Thursday, you're ready to go. But, you know, you do that for a couple years, that's tough."
Yeah, these are things our bodies weren't meant to do over and over again. And these guys are great warriors, and they thankfully have good staffs to help them get through it. But those second couple of days, I can't even imagine.
No, I can't either. He is Dr. Eric Pfeifel. Go to mymosh.com to get more information on him. The first thing I want to talk about on the other side of the break is turf toe. You know, it sounds silly, but it's not. That's a real injury that is very painful.
Don't mess with the toe.
Don't mess with the toe. We'll talk to Dr. Pfeifel again on the other side. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. It's a wide variety of music right there, going from 21 Paddle to this.
Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio.
All Ohio.
There's, sensing a theme here.
I am sensing a theme.
Every time.
There you go. Every single time. One time you were in during the holidays, we did holiday music.
That was nice.
It wasn't all Ohio then, but it is now. We are talking to Dr. Eric Pfeifel. You can go to mymosh.com for more information on him and some of the things that he does. We're going through common football injuries, and a lot of the ones that I think people know most about, I don't know if we have to get into, but some of the ones that I think there's a misconception, and I think turf toe is one of those. I think fans that are unfamiliar with that injury might downplay the severity because it's non-threatening, and it sounds like it probably isn't a big deal, but certainly make no mistake, you can sideline players for a long time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is akin to thinking about fingernail injuries in pitchers in baseball. Guys that throw a ball can't tolerate their fingertips getting injured or fingernails, even though it seems like a really wimpy injury. If you think about a toe in a football player, that seems like something, tape it up and let's move on. Turf toe is a very difficult injury to deal with. It's especially in linemen and guys playing along the line. In which they have an injury to the big toe. That's usually where the toe gets flexed up towards the knee, hyperextends, and the soft tissue underneath gets injured. And that still seems pretty wimpy. But when you're talking about a guy that's 200-300 pounds pushing against another guy in a kind of a sumo position where you're grappling, and then you're trying to push off, if you don't have something to push off the ground with that feels comfortable, even if it's padded, even if it's taped, the rest of your body is going to be ineffective. So,
and there's not, other than rest, there, right? There's not a surgery can do for it. It is a rest type injury,
it's
right?
It's typically a soft tissue, just giving it some time, mobilizing it, reconditioning the tissues around it, protecting it. There are some surgeries. Unfortunately, if you do the surgery, it typically means the season.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
So if somebody has one near the end of the season and then they have the off season, because I don't know if I've heard a lot of people that have had surgery because of turf toe.
The majority of the linemen will wait till the end of the season if it's still bothering them, and most of them are able to come back. I mean, the big uglies are guys that deal with pain all the time.
Right.
I mean, they are pounding each other. So these type of injuries, they typically can get through without surgery, and if they do, they delay it. But it is something that seems simple, but it is very, very difficult for guys of this size.
Yeah, the other injury that I think people shake their head at, but there's such a difference when someone has an ankle sprain and someone has a high ankle sprain. We talked about this a lot last year with the receiver from the Packers who had, they said in the beginning it was an ankle sprain and he was out week after week. And then it came out it was a high ankle sprain, which is a big difference.
Right. And, you know, the differentiation is based on the location. An ankle sprain, if you think about that little knob on the end of your outside of your ankle near the top of your shoe, there's a small ligament there, and that's a common ankle sprain. So if you step off the curb wrong and your foot points towards your midline, that's a common ankle sprain. But in football, oftentimes these guys' ankles are put in a position that are much different than that, in which the ankle is forced up or forced down at high energy, in which that part of the ankle is sprained, but it extends up the leg into the calf between the two bones, the fibula and the tibia, and there's a soft tissue bridge there, and that gets injured. And the problem with that is unlike the pain you get with an ankle sprain, that gives a feeling of instability, and they have a difficult time bearing weight, let alone pushing off, and the taping regimens aren't as effective.
Hey, does it surprise you? You know, some people are questioning whether Jordy Nelson is 100% back. I just think it's rust at this point for me personally. Watching him run, I think he looks fine, but he hasn't played in game action in a long time. Do you think he's 100%?
I don't. And I think there's four factors on it. I was actually talking with my buddies during the game last week. I think there's four factors. One, his age. He's not a young athlete who had an ACL injury. Two, he had an ACL injury, and we'll probably talk about this in a bit. The return to full strength after an ACL usually takes a year to 2 years where that knee feels absolutely comfortable and confident, where you can feel like you were back to normal if everything goes well. The third is he had another knee injury on the other side,
right,
during the season. But fourth is we've gone to this protection of the athlete in the NFL. We've changed the rules. We changed the training regimens, but you see the majority of our athletes are not playing. The starters aren't playing during the preseason anymore. And I will tell you that when you don't have that, the timing and nuances of such a fast game like the NFL, these guys, their timing is off. So when you put all those together, he definitely isn't 100%.
Hey, you know, you're wearing that Ohio State Buckeye hat pretty proud, but I don't see you with a Cleveland Browns hat on.
Well, I have one.
Do you?
It's old. Yeah. I haven't bought anything new for a while, and it's frustrating. I will tell you, you can see the dichotomy of how teams are managed looking at the Patriots and the Browns.
Yes.
In 3 weeks, the Patriots are going to go three quarterbacks and have three wins. In Cleveland, they're going to go three quarterbacks and have three losses most likely. And it has a lot to do with team harmony and from top down. And when you don't have consistency, it doesn't matter what type of athletes you bring in. They aren't going to work.
It's interesting that they didn't go for Carson Wentz, and they traded the pick out, which seemed like a good move. And I think it was a good move. They can bolster depth that way, but they fired the scouts that were pro Carson Wentz in like the days and hours after that trade.
I don't understand anything they do in the front office there.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz showed them exactly what they should have done by choosing for the future rather than getting a human Band-Aid in Robert Griffin III.
Yeah, I agree with that. A human Band-Aid, that's a – you want to talk about guys that get injured a lot. He all the time.
The over-under for games he was going to make it through was 4, and he didn't even get close.
He's not even close, way under. We'll continue our conversation on the other side of the break. Dr. Eric Pifel, we're going to talk some ACL, MCL stuff on the other side quickly because I think people are starting to be more educated on those because they're really common.
It's becoming kind of the norm in discussion in day-to-day life, the Today Show, you know, normal media. We're talking about ACLs and looking at videos, just the stuff I do in the office.
Yeah, it's incredible. Again, he is Dr. Eric Pifel. Go to mymosh.com to get more information on him. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Name of the song, My City Was Gone by the Pretenders. I'm just going to guess they're from Ohio.
Also from Cuyahoga Falls.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Great music, great people, great athletes from Ohio.
That's awesome. There it is. Well played, Mitch. But my city was gone. Our guest this week, Dr. Eric Pifel. If you haven't guessed, he loves Wisconsin, but he is an Ohio boy.
I'm not going back to Ohio.
Not going back. Loves it here. But his roots are from Ohio, and that's not a bad thing, man. A lot of similarities between Ohio and Wisconsin people. I think hard workers, and they care about people, care about sports.
So true.
You're in a perfect spot. Cavaliers won, and that was awesome. My son-in-law's brother-in-law, they live a block from me. Him and his wife are expecting their first child, and it's a boy. And I said, you know his name, right? And James like, well, I know it. How do you know it? I said, well, it's LeBron Kyrie, right? He goes, I'm calling him Bronny, man. I'm calling him Bronny.
Nice.
Yeah, it is nice. Hey, let's, if we can, we had finished last segment talking a little bit about ACL injuries. And 5 years ago, Dr. Pifel, that was like, he's got an ACL injury, his career's over, and nobody knew what it was. It's become very commonplace now. And I think people have done their research to understand what they are. Is that a daily occurrence for you this time of year? Is it a weekly occurrence that you see an ACL?
ACL in my office is a multiple times per week occurrence. Unfortunately, athletes have these all the time. They've been occurring for years and years and years, and we've been managing them surgically for over 30 years. However, the lay press has become accustomed to them, where it has become a very normal thing, as it used to be just in our office, but now we discuss it. I mean, if you're watching NFL football the other night on Sunday night, they had graphics up of knees showing what the ACL was and how the reconstruction was done. I mean, these are basically the videos we utilize when we're talking about new products with our patients. And now it's become just the norm. And I think a lot of that's based on the immediacy of information that we have now, social media, but also the amount of coverage of sports we have. There's more things to talk about.
How much did you look deeply into the Teddy Bridgewater injury?
That's a bad injury.
That is a bad injury. I looked at it. They started showing how it turned and all everything. And Dr. Brian McCarty was in a couple weeks ago, and he actually brought the knee, and he said, "Look, this is what they were talking about at Dr. Oz, and this is totally wrong. And here's what happened." That's a bad injury.
Right. Some of the lay press had talked about that he had had a kneecap dislocation with his ACL. He actually had a knee dislocation. And as Dr. McCarty probably alluded to, this is not an ACL injury. Do not prepare Minnesota Viking fans, if you're listening here, and go get someone else. They did the right thing because he will most likely be out a year, if not longer. And I'll be very surprised if he plays next year to any significant capacity.
Boy, oh boy. And you're talking about an athlete that is, you know, he is a top level athlete with all the resources he needs to get this back. And I do too. After looking at it and going online and researching some of it, he I don't know what else he could have done. That's as bad as it gets.
Yeah, I hope that he does well. I hope that I am wrong. But I would tell you, for fans of the Vikings or people that are considering fantasy football picks, this is a bad injury. This is not going to be a Jordy Nelson ACL.
Boy, that's scary. Hey, what if you can, on a daily basis, walk me through what your day is. Do you see patients in the morning? Is there a certain day for surgeries? What's a day in the life of Dr. Eric Weifel like?
Usually I get up about 5 in the morning. Usually I work out, have my coffee, my breakfast. A couple days of the week I do surgery, 5 or 6 surgeries, and then do a clinic in the afternoon. Then I may stop at the training room at one of my schools. On weekends I cover sports, covered football last night.
What schools do you cover?
I cover Brookfield Academy.
Okay.
Where my kids go to school. So we covered the game last night, and it's busy. I'm usually answering emails and phone calls for my patients, planning for my surgery day the next day. But it's hectic, but it's the norm. It's complete chaos in a controlled setting.
Can I tell you a quick story about Brookfield Academy?
Sure.
I'm in 100% in love with the school. And here's something that happened a couple years ago. My son-in-law was be a principal at a inner city charter school. And he was getting everything ready, and I said, "How's it going?" He said, "You know, I'm really concerned. We have no desks for our first graders, and I don't know what to do. There are no desks, no chairs for our first graders. So I'm making calls," and I went on the show and I talked about it. And a friend of mine who was at Brookfield Academy sent me a text to call me when the show's over. So I called him. He worked at Brookfield Academy, met with the principal there, and called me on Monday and said, "Hey, look, rent a truck, grab your son-in-law. We have this storage space. We have these beautiful desks that we want to donate to you guys. This school," and they said, "Please don't tell anybody about it." Well, I have to tell people about it because out of love and no other reason. They helped him out. It's a great school your kids go to.
I think it's a great school. They epitomize what Wisconsinites are. I mean, they're willing to help people, and that's why I'm staying here.
Yeah, good for you. Hey, Dr. Pipe, it's good to see you.
Great
you
to
know,
be here.
Yeah, say hi to the boys and to your wife, Tiffany. And I think that the Brookfield Academy thing is great. We could go on and on with them. Good luck to the Browns. Good luck to the Buckeyes. Good luck to the Badgers today. They're going to need it.
Go Badgers.
It's good seeing you. Okay, go to mymosh.com. Dr. Eric Pifel. Get some information on him. He's one of the real good guys out there. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.